big difficulty, I suppose, was trying to make sense of life, like, you know, trying to integrate. And I suppose we didn't really get a lot of psychological support at the time. And yeah, it wasn't really, I floated through life being rather disconnected and, yeah, with a sense of just numbness, maybe a degree of numbness and not being able to feel myself and others as well, like, and also a deep sense of just depression and a sense of hopelessness, like, you know, difficult to see the end, the light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras, and now your host, Aditya Jai Kumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here,
host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we help you calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss. In today's episode, I chat with Josef Steiner about some amazing, powerful themes and stories, including energetics of martial arts. We talk about music. We talk about starting an eco center. We talk about living a life of purpose and living your calling. We also talk about breathwork and cold exposure, some of my favorite topics. So this episode is going to be something that you have been waiting for. I can just feel it intuitively. It's going to be a great conversation. So if you like this topic, then make sure that you subscribe to our podcast, because otherwise we'll keep releasing episodes and you not know about it. So hit subscribe or hit follow if you're on Spotify, and just take 2 minutes to either tell your friend, your family about this podcast, or maybe leave us an iTunes rating and review. That's the best thing you can do for us, because one rating and review can really push our podcast in front of more listeners, more viewers, and that's how we grow, right? Because you probably know this episode is free of cost, but that's how you can support us. All right, so starting with our special guest for today, Josef Steiner, originally from Austria. Josef has been living in Ireland for the past 30 years together with his partner, Sierra. They live on 1.8 acres of land, managing and working in a busy holistic health center, keeping bees and growing organic food in their large garden and green houses. That's amazing. And Josef has a great interest in nature, health, playing music and martial arts, and most of his activities and research is centered around those topics. And he has a deep passion for breathwork, cold exposure, and resilience building, and he loves to support people on their self-development journey. So welcome to our show, Josef. How are you doing?
Thank you very much, Aditya. Thanks for the invite. Great to be here.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. I always feel grateful about technology. Obviously, there are some detriments of technology. If you spend too much time on your phone, you get addicted to the notifications. But in another way, it's good, because I am able to speak with you and watch you face to face in that amazing camera of yours. I'm in Vancouver and you are in Ireland. Isn't that amazing?
That's cool, isn't it? Yeah. The best of technology.
Yeah. Technology for good. Technology for impact and yes, for facilitating healing
right.
Works.
Makes big difference to the possibilities we have. Yeah.
It really does. It really does. And so there are so many different topics that I wanted to talk to you about. Things that I wanted to do more of as well. And so that's partly why I've been, you know, really interested in chatting with you. And I'm glad that we are able to make it today. But I want to know, how did it all start for you, right? You were born and brought up in Austria, right? How many years did you spend mm-hmm. there? What was life like in Austria back in those days?
Yes. So I was born 1969. It seems like a long time ago. Without technology. Right. So I grew up in a small village and sort of middle class upbringing. And my dad was really passionate about nature. He was a hunter, and I suppose I spent my fortunate childhood climbing mountains, staying on mountain larches, jumping into cold rivers, throwing myself into the snow every winter, and having a really rich childhood. And I think a lot of the inspirations for what I do today really go back to that early childhood. And so then that was the childhood. My adolescence then took a turn to the worst. So I lost my dad to suicide, and just spent, I suppose, the time between 13 and my early adulthood in depression, very lost, loads of drugs, loads of just a floating through life without a sense of knowing who I was and what I was here to do. And so both those episodes inspired me to basically get to where I am today.
Yeah, most certainly. Thanks for sharing that. I lost my mom last year. So she passed away from this physical self. So I know that it's never an easy journey to go through when you lose a parent, right? But what was it like for you? How did that incident affect you? Right after that happened, I'm sure since you were very young, it was probably very difficult to handle and make sense out of life as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was the big the big difficulty, I suppose, was trying to make sense of life, like, trying to integrate. And I suppose we didn't really get a lot of psychological support at the time. And it wasn't really, I floated through life being rather disconnected and, with a sense of just numbness, maybe a degree of numbness, and not being able to feel myself and others as well, and also a deep sense of just depression and a sense of hopelessness, difficult to see the end, the light at the end of the tunnel.
And so at what point in your life did you end up meeting your sensei, who is Juo Iwamoto, right? Iwamoto?
Yeah, Juo Iwamoto. Yeah. So Iwamoto sensei, I went when I was 17. Yeah. I first moved to Ireland. At the time, it was the farthest place away from home to get to in Europe. And Ireland really changed my perspective on life. Like, it was Ireland in the late 80s was still almost a third world country. It was very rough and wild and interesting. And I suppose it saved my life to be able to make that step and get out of home and find myself in some ways. But I had a lot of unfinished business, so I had to go back. Right. And there was a deep longing for some guidance. Maybe it was a father figure or somebody I could look towards for purpose and knowing what to do. Iwamoto sensei, I moved to Vienna, and he was, I suppose, he embodied the everything. Safety, kindness, openness, flexibility could embody in one person. So for me, it was a real lifesaver. And I wasn't really interested in martial art. It was more when we started, I started together with a friend. It was more oh, we are sitting a lot working on computers. Maybe we should do something for our body. And my friend studied Japanese culture. So he said, oh, I heard of this crazy teacher in the red light district in Vienna. And so we went, and I got so hooked, and it was really, he became a great friend, a very warm individual that I spend a lot of time with. And it really, it gave me something to aspire to, and the sense of, I was at the sense if I can move through the world so gracefully when I'm, he was 76 at the time I met him, I'd be quite happy. Like, you know, there was something about when he entered the mat that there was, there was a feeling he was moved by something within, which made a frail old man, almost blind, float, almost giving a sense of floating over the mat.
As if like there was a chi flowing through him. So you were just gliding through.
Yes, so exactly. And I wanted to assimilate this and become it in a way.
It almost feels like, you know, there was a fatherly figure that he embodied, like you mentioned, security, safety, but also kindness and compassion. And that is something maybe you were craving for at that point.
Absolutely. Like it was very badly needed for me. And even though I was only, he moved back to Japan and I moved to Ireland after 4 years of practice, it left a foundation just a knowing that this is worth pursuing. And it's, you know, this is like 30 years later now, and I'm still at it.
That is amazing. So you ended up studying with him judo and aikido, right?
He taught aikido, but he held a sixth dan in judo as well.
Okay.
But he was teaching aikido exclusively. Aikido and shiatsu. He was a shiatsu master, So he also shared. He shared this knowledge in his teachings. Yeah.
So for listeners right now, what is aikido? And how is it different from maybe something that's more popular like karate?
Yes. So I suppose I don't know much about karate. I know quite a bit about aikido, but aikido really, it's a relatively young martial art which developed in Japan, I suppose, in the last century. And in contrast to most martial arts, it's sort of striving for peace. So the aim for the research and the practice was how can we create peace in the world, and how can we actually physically examine this proposition? Like, so it's you know, it's easy to have a vision for peace. But what happens in the face of an attack? Like, are you really peaceful? Do you start to fight? And I think fighting is instinctual and intuitive and natural. So it's in a way, we don't have to learn. Well, we have to learn how to fight better and win a fight, maybe. But to start a fight is very easy. To continue a fight is also very easy. And then it's more about winning and losing. Whereas aikido really is, how can I behave so fighting doesn't escalate? Yeah. Even in the midst of challenging circumstances. So, and I've been at it for over 30 years, and I can still say it's a very challenging proposition that, you know, it's still difficult not to fight.
Right. Yeah, I've been meditating on this recently. You know, the importance of things like martial arts and strengthening yourself, whether it's at an individual level or maybe in a group, right? And I love the fact that you said it's all about or at least implied, it's all about the choice, right? Nobody wants to fight, or at least that is what is the preference for a lot of people. But if you're not strong, if you don't know how to fight, then nonviolence is not a choice for you. It's your only option.
Right? Yes.
But if you're strong, like for example, the elephant in the jungle, it's the strongest animal, but it chooses nonviolence because if it needs to protect itself, yeah. It can. Right? So there's a subtle difference between the two. A rabbit chooses nonviolence, but you know, if a coyote or a lion comes, it's not going to be able to protect itself just like an elephant. So it's important sometimes to have these martial arts to know or to be able to choose to de-escalate, like you pointed out, or at least choose no violence in the first place.
Yes, I think, and it's a Hapke's escalatory reflexes are built into our nervous system in a way. Like, you know, so in a way we have to, you know, if we're attacked, we either avoid or we resist in a way. Like, yeah. And we don't have to, you know, sometimes if I'm strong and male, maybe, often we have a tendency towards sympathetic fight, like if we are not as strong, or we often choose flight, like we freeze and dissociate, but each of those responses often doesn't really create a better situation in a way, like, and very often those reflexes become stuck in our physiology. So we start to live our life driven by those autonomic reflexes. Yeah,
that is so interesting. So you need not be in a fight, but those reflexes are still governing your life, right? Like, for example, if you're in a room where there are all strangers, that freeze response is still going to run in your mind, even though you're not confronting or fighting a person physically.
Mm. Yes. It all starts with a brain trying to create safety or keep me safe and alive, and previous experiences shape the predictive nature of the brain. And if we in a way, if you're not careful, if you don't pay attention, it's very easy. Or if we become traumatized, it's very easy to become stuck in those reflexes. So all of a sudden, neutral events become threatening and dangerous and trigger us to fight, flight, or freeze. Yeah,
that's very, very true. So what life lessons did your sensei teach you outside of the, you know, what do you call that? Do you call that the dojo or outside the sparring center? I'm sure he must have taught you certain other things that then, you know, made a difference in your life.
Yes. So the life lessons I learned from Iwamoto sensei was really, it's worth to be opened, and it's really important to remain, keep a flexible mind, an open mind, basically, and to always live and meet the world for what it is, not for what it was, in a way. And he was a really great example to be able to. I still remember when he went back to Japan. He handed over his black belt to his senior student and said, "I'm really sorry, I couldn't teach you anymore. I gave everything that I could. Thank you very much. And I am moving to Japan. I don't know anybody there anymore, but I think I've won a friend who is still alive." And after, I don't know, he came over in 1969 and 69, 70, after 35 years of living in Austria, he moved back to Japan to spend the end of his life in Japan. And you know, without knowing anybody. Like, and in a way, he did it just like he would choose to move anywhere else, like next door, down the road. Like, it was always this sense of awe and curiosity and a real appreciation of who came and what was there to be explored in the moment. Yeah, that's what I learned from him. Yeah,
yeah, it feels like some of those senses have a strong sense of detachment, and also a strong sense of intuition to know when it's time for a certain job and when that cycle ends, and then moving on to the next thing and being highly apologetic. Yes. Or maybe even respectful to the other people in his group, or maybe his students as well. There seems a lot of combination of discipline, but also knowing when it's time. And that's hard to do for some people.
Yes.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's a hard thing to do. I haven't seen it a lot in my life, but this was probably one of the biggest learnings. I mean, he was one of my early teachers. I had a lot of other, or I had another great teacher who I continued on with, but in a way, for me, he was the savior in a way.
Is it because he helped you sort of release some of that trauma, or maybe at least navigate through your life at that juncture?
Yes. So he gave me hope in a way, and a sense of if you practice something and if you commit to it and if you search deeply, it's going to be a long process, but there will be light at the end of the tunnel, or more light.
Right. Yeah, that's so important. Sometimes if we are in a dark place, sometimes we only need one thing to work on. You know, it almost feels as if when you go to a restaurant, when you have a menu that has like 104 items, it becomes so overwhelming and anxiety driving. But if you have somebody tell you, you know what, just focus on that one thing. It's going to take time, but just focus, yes, on that, and I provide you the assurance that you will get there. That sometimes makes all the difference, because it gives you the confidence, the certainty.
Yeah.
So at what point did you go back to Ireland? You said that you were in Vienna back, and then did you move back at some time? Or
yes. I moved back in 1992. Bought a house on the West Coast and moved over to do up the house and start a woodworking business.
Did you have experience in that, or did you just want to?
I was always interested in making things with my hands, and my dad was a blacksmith. And we had a big factory with many tools, and so I was always building something. stealing tools out of the magazine. But yeah, no, it kept going. Also, you know, I got into architecture and building, and I was pursuing, you know, I worked in construction for a long time, in the design and build end of construction.
So you seem like a multidisciplinary person, a man of multiple talents.
When I look back, it seems that way. It always feels I only do one thing at the time, so it doesn't feel so. But there are, I suppose, it's in some ways this living with a lack of knowing and a lack of purpose for some time really made me search in a way, and the searching in a way continued. Yeah, so I always interested to open myself to new things and to change trajectory or to explore. And in a way I could say, well, you know, it was a curse and a gift. You know, initially it was a big lacking and then a despair about nobody told me how to do it and what to do. And I had to figure it all out by myself. But then later on in life, I became to appreciate that it was also a big gift. And I see a lot of people who don't have this ability, like they're much more sure of how the world is and what should be done. And so I'm in a way, I lack this certainty. So for me, it's everything is not an answer, but always a question. Oh, really? Yeah, that's the way it should be. Interesting. Let's think about that one. Yeah, yeah. But I don't have this. And I think this often comes from the parental input, you know, the dad saying, I'm going to tell you how this works. And I never had that. So
I think it's a great position to be in to keep questioning the current paradigm. Keep asking questions and finding out different ways to do things. And if you don't know something currently, then not attaching that thing to your identity, but at least developing the skills and going on this quest, right? Embarking on a new journey. It's always amazing to start a brand new chapter, no matter what age you are, whether you're young or even older. I think it's a gift because some people I know, you know, they're like, from the age of 19, I knew I was going to be a pianist, and that's what I did for the rest of my life. That's good. That's wonderful. Some people want to be an.
Well, that's another. I mean, that is a nice.
It's good to have that, right?
You know, if I mean, it's a nice thing as well. Like, you know, this sort of call for absolute certainty. I probably envy that a little bit sometimes.
yeah. Whereas some other people are doing this and then they do that and they do that and they do that. But ultimately, it seems like they arrive at what their calling is by the process of negation. Okay, this is not me. This is not me. This is not me. Or maybe they develop all these transferable skills. And then ultimately, when their life's project comes into play, now you know how to build a house. Now you know you're right breathwork, and you know how to connect with different people. So talk to me about your custom built eco center. I would appreciate if you say the name again because I don't want to get it wrong.
It's Nádúr, which is the Irish for nature. Nádúr,
Okay. So tell us about that, and also tell us maybe how did that come about.
Yes, so the Eco Center was really a shift. It was my big transformational shift at, you know, about 15 years ago. And I told you I was in construction, and I ended up in a place where I was in a toxic business partnership, driving all over Ireland, building houses, and it's in those. I did it for about 5 years in this formation, and every year I gained about 5 kilos. So, and I just saw a picture that I a picture of that time recently, and I was like, oh my God, I don't recognize myself at all. And but anyways, it culminated in the, I was importing houses, timber houses from Austria, and for the company that I was partner in as well, I was building the house that I live in now. It was supposed to be a house to live in and then also a show house with a sales office and a platform to promote our houses. And I'd already started to build. Everything was in process, and my whole business partnership went completely toxic.
Oh.
And one day I drove up the little back road. It's about a lane for one car and half a bicycle. And I realized I was driving with 110 kilometers with my teeth clenched, and inside I was strangling my business partner over and over and over again. and I realized, actually at that moment, I realized that this has nothing to do with him. Like, you know, he's probably having a tea and cake in Dublin with his friends. And it was all in my head. And I was the one who was killing himself in a way. And in that moment, I decided to extract myself from the company. And it was a painful transition. So we were in the middle of building a house. I had to move from a 100,000 euro salary with a 70,000 euro company car to, hey, I'm going to retrain myself. And so I actually decided to pursue and train in the paradigm that helped me most to heal from whatever was going on for me. And it was basically craniosacral therapy, which is a form of osteopathy, but it works in the subtle realm of the body. And it really helped me to overcome whatever I was going through. And that was the beginning. So I trained. My partner was already Kira. She's a long-standing massage therapist. She also trained before me as a craniosacral therapist. And I could see her transform, and I could see her enthusiasm and her passion. I started to read some of the literature around it, and I was like, wow, this really speaks to me. It sort of really connected with this Buddhist Zen non-doing, allowing, listening aspect of what we also work with in Aikido. And in some ways, I felt like it touched in exactly on that. And I did the training, and it was an eye-opener. I just loved it. Like, you know, and it's probably the first time in my life that I know I told you about the safety of my sensei, but I can only tell you this looking back on what I got. I wasn't able to name that at the time. Oh, it's because he's so safe, and this is retrospectively. But in this training, I really understood how pivotal safety is. Like, yeah, and I realized, apart from moments, I never felt safe in my life. Yeah, I was always driven by a feeling of unsafety and not being met. And I when I did the training, I all of a sudden I realized, wow, this is how safety feels like. And there's people there who actually who know what they're doing. Like, you know, they know what happens in nervous systems, in minds and bodies, when you establish this safe listening field. And did the training, and straight away it was like I was like a fish in water. So I the training was 2 years. I started to work, and then I started to assist on the training in Dublin. And I'm now a senior tutor on the trainings in different places in Europe, in different cities. I travel and teach modules of helping people to become craniosacral therapists. And this led to the healing center, Nodur. So the sales office with all the power sockets that was designed to sell houses is now the breath studio for my Wim Hof workshops and the dojo for my Aikido classes and the yoga studio for my partner and the clinic for, yeah. So we've got four clinic rooms in the house. We rent them out to some people and my partner and myself work here. So that's Nodur now. Evolved slowly now over the last 15 years.
That is amazing. So my question to you is, the idea or that impetus to convert the sales, you know, building or the sales area into a very different function of being an eco center and your home as well. Was that something that just came to you intuitively? You know, the idea, was it through a dream or maybe like what was it? How did you get the notion of making that shift towards something that's more sustainable?
It was very organic. It didn't come as this, oh, wow, that's what we are doing now. It was more like all the time my partner, she had a massage studio in the place. Yeah. So that was her space. And whilst I went through the training, I stopped teaching Aikido in town. And I said, well, why do I drive into town if I can just do an Aikido class in the room that's empty? And so then the Aikido moved. My partner was teaching yoga in town. So then all of a sudden, hey, maybe I should teach yoga in this space as well. Like, and then a friend of ours, who is also a therapist, she lost her clinic in town. And we had one room packed with all the boxes that were never opened.
Okay. Right.
The messy room, so to say. And yeah, it was, Kira said, wow, why don't we ask Karin, why don't we offer Karin this room? So we asked her, well, do you want to work here? We're going to have it tidied up in a week's time. And Karin moved into the room and with a very busy following and clinic. And all of a sudden we had three busy therapists in the place. And then we just opened the space to other people who asked for, because it started to gain a reputation, you know, as this really nice, beautiful place in nature, close to the city. And a lot of people come and go. And so now it's a refuge, really. Like, you know, everybody who comes here, they are like, oh my God, it's just being here is already healing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why do they feel it's healing? Is it mainly because of the experience that they have with the people who are providing those experiences, whether it's yoga or breath work or, you know, craniosacral therapy, or is it something about the building as well that you've done to, you know, like sacred geometry or something to create those energies?
I think it's the nature of the building and its openness to nature. There's a lot of glass. The beauty of the nature, it's really engulfed in lush forestry with a river running to its side and a little stream running through the middle and the big vegetable garden, the geese, the chickens, the ducks, the bees. So it's a bit like, how do you call it, an Ark of Noah.
Ark of Noah? What is that?
It's Noah's Ark.
Oh,
Ark,
yeah, Noah's
the,
Ark.
You know, like the... all the animals are represented, right. And yeah,
you know what, that is one of my goals as well, you know, is to open a you know, like a healing center / eco center in the future. And so when that happens, I'm going to be reaching out to you to get some advice around, you know.
You're very welcome. I know, after 15 years we know quite a bit about it and what works well, and yeah.
Cool. We'll do that. Because it's beautiful to be able to not just yourself make a difference in people's lives, but to create an environment, an ecosystem, so to speak, where you are sustainable in every way. So you have a farm, you've got a bee, you raise bees as well.
An apiary, right? Yeah.
And then, of course, you have people that are coming close, and then you have flowing water, which is so good from a feng shui standpoint, but also from a every healing practice slash modality talks about the importance of flowing river and flowing energy, right? It does something to you. That's great. So how did you discover breathwork then? When did that happen?
Yes. So breathwork in a way started, so Aikido is really, there's a lot of breathwork in Aikido. Mm-hmm. And I learned in a way, because I've been often reflecting upon the nature of the breathwork in Aikido and the purpose and the, you know, what's the sort of the difference to what I do now. And I think, I mean, my conclusion is really, in a way, Aikido is a traditional, there's a huge body of practice, like a huge body of practice, endless amounts of techniques, endless amounts of exercises, the breathing, there's a misogi practice, which is like a purification of mind and body with cold water exposure. And so it's all contained in the Aikido tradition. But because it's so much, you never get to do. So in a way, you always browse one, you know, you do the misogi practice, but you do it once a year, like, or twice a year, like, yeah. Because you have so much other things to do. And I often think it's a bit like the same with yoga. You know, there's this wealth of knowledge and a wealth of good things, like, yeah, but it's also packaged within a lot of things which maybe are not as essential, you know, and maybe you'd be better off spending time practicing other things, like, yeah, but it's because it's a traditional evolution and it's not really backed by scientific inquiry. Well, not in the sense that we apply it now. It's more folk science and personal research and transmission by experience and knowledge. But it doesn't really sort of start with the proposition, well, what is the best type of breathing to achieve? And let's look at all the breathing techniques and find the best one for this task. It's more like, oh, well, that's the breathing that we do, and that's the one that we have to explore. So when I think the initial breathwork, modern breathwork, came really by Kira sent me a clip about, I think it was about, well, maybe 2015, 16, something like 7 years ago. And it was this Dutch man running a marathon in shorts, barefoot. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. This is impossible. Wow. And so I watched it and I was really curious and fascinated. But then it was when I saw it, it was really, it was something that an extreme endurance athlete aims to do. I didn't really have a relationship to, oh, that's something I want to do. Like, you know, it was like so out of the, wow, that's crazy and amazing how you can do this. And that was it. So it slipped by. And then a few years later, I came across another clip, and it was Wim Hof talking about his story, talking about how he lost his wife, how he to suicide, how he used nature and the cold and the technique to overcome this enormous trauma, and then leading onwards using all this amazing records to feed his family. Yeah, and it really touched me. You know, having lost a dad to suicide and knowing how desperate and how low and how deep you go with this type of experience. Yeah. And I was just like, wow, I realized, wow, this is more than just something that a crazy Dutch guy does. And it was, I could really see, I loved also the vision. Everybody deserves to be happy, healthy, and strong. And, you know, this is for everybody. And just this enormous passion that the guy was radiating. And yes, so I started to explore breath, Wim Hof breathing, or so to say Wim Hof, some mixes of Wim Hof breathing on YouTube. And I started to do the breathing. And, you know, when I did it the first time, I was like, oh my God, like it was literally, I could feel every cell in my body was tingling. I was so alive. And I was brought back to my psychedelic experiences in my youth, that the good parts of that experience, this sort of eye-opener connection to, just a world outside of the normal way of perceiving it. Like, yeah, so a real shift in an altered state in a way. And I knew straight away when I did the first time, I knew, wow, this is amazing. And I started to do it regularly, very random. You know, I don't know. It was somebody clipped him and did a recording that he did somewhere and re-edited it. So it wasn't really anything official. I kept finding even more intensive ones and all sorts of different. And I started to notice that, wow, I never ever moved out of a breathing session feeling worse than I moved in. So it was always, I always felt better, more relaxed, more connected to my body, more sense of vitality, a calmer mind, and a more wholesome state. Yeah. And I actually never had anything else that worked so reliably all the time to change my state. You know, if I was low, I did my breathing session and I felt better. If I was fatigued, or if I felt like I had a flu coming on or whatever, a cold. And all the time, it just did the job. Like, yeah. And so I was hooked really every day. And I'm used to, if I take on something, it's every day. And I just explore. And then at some stage, I did it for a few years. And then I also started to bring in the cold exposure that I had been doing in the Aikido traditions. I combined a little bit the chanting of the Misogi tradition. I invited some friends and we went into the river. And it was more like playing around, like without any formal, just from what I knew from Aikido. And, you know, we put on a breath recording and all brief together, and then out into the river, community sharing lunch. And that's how it started. And then I, at some stage, I was like, oh, I should probably go and meet this guy. Yeah. And this was in my back, the back of my mind. And I went to Berlin and I was teaching a craniosacral training in Berlin. And I came out at the end of the day, 5:30, move out of my studio, the teaching studio, walk to my Airbnb. I cross two traffic lights. I look up 2 meters in front of me, Wim Hof with his child and his partner. And I said, Wim. And he said, hey, man, hey, how are you doing? Yeah. in his shorts and in his Hawaiian shirt, a big smile. And I said, Wim, I really like what you're doing. And he said, hey, man, yeah, great. You should come to Holland. This is great. Yeah, come along. And I'm like, oh, wow, yeah. So I never even knew that there was an official Wim Hof method program or anything. I just pulled everything off YouTube. So I went home that evening and opened the laptop, and Wim Hof method activities, weekend with Wim, 3 weeks later. So I booked in and I went over. And it was like it was like the most crazy, spontaneous, wild weekend adventure you could go to.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Was it one where you were climbing onto the, you know, on the mountain where it was snowy? Or was it one, it was just the ice plunge?
No, this was one in his home in Holland. He's got like an adventure park, like with ice bath, swimming pool, cold plunge, some yards, amazing plants, a beautiful studio, you know, for practice. So we have 45 people, and it was a 2-day intensive. Wim on the guitar, on the gongs. There was a piper, a Scottish piper playing. It was amazing. It was like sensory overstimulation. But I just noticed everybody had an amazing experience. There was 45 people. A lot of them had no experience with breathing, and he literally pushed them through like 1 hour power breathing. Like, it was crazy. Like, but everybody left elevated, like with a sense of purpose, connection, new ideas. This is amazing. And yeah, and I always tell my the people who come, my students, that I haven't met as many smiling, laughing, cheering people in my whole life than I have with doing this type of breath work and Wim Hof. And yeah, so after that, I started the program. I said I sign up, did the fundamentals online, then I did the advanced academy, and then COVID hit.
Oh, okay.
Everything paused, so it was all postponed. And I also being a therapist and working a lot with trauma and with the nervous system, and I sort of felt that I wanted to be a little bit more precise with my breathing. Like, you know, it felt like a little bit like a one size fits all.
Right. Yeah.
And I know it works for whim. I just felt like I wanted more. I wanted a bigger palette of possibilities to offer. And that's when I came across Soma Breath. I heard Niraj. He was on some podcast, and I heard him talk about breathing, and then also about Wim Hof and the differences. And I said, oh wow, this is it speaks to me. Like what he was saying was really, you know, it sort of said, oh, yeah, no, there's something about having a broad spectrum of tools for breathing that was adaptable to everybody's needs. And yeah, it was a gift, really, a real gift, because COVID was there. I could do the Soma Breath training online. It suited me perfectly. I had all this time. I really, you know, it pushed me into dealing with technology and recording stuff and, you know, stuff I'd never done, like finding cameras and microphones and mixers. And I suppose it also touched me. I'm a cellist, and so the music was really inspiring, and I wanted to do my own music mixes, and you know, all of a sudden I was in a in a bubble.
Right.
And it sort of sailed me through COVID, and all the loss of all the other, like our center was closed for a long time. There was a lot of things. I know we were trapped in paradise, but we were still trapped.
Yeah.
But so that's when Soma Breath came along. And I learned loads. Like I really like the program. I think it's very nuanced. All the tools, the principles around the connection to the autonomic nervous system. I use it a lot. Like I use it a lot for my Wim Hof, because in a way Wim's it's more non-specific, so you can, you know, it's much closer than it was when I started, because there's also more, you know, the breathing has sort of softened down a little bit in the Wim Hof. Maybe they know each other, and you know, probably there was some exchanges as well. Like, and you can feel the music has come in more with the Wim Hof, and it's probably a lot more similar than it was when I started. Definitely, like, because there was some really high intensity people promoting.
So I'm going to ask you a question now. You know, this is a question that is kind of contentious in the breathwork space, right? Because you have mouth breathing and you've got nasal breathing only, right? What are your thoughts on that? Do you prefer mostly nasal, or do you feel that depending on the situation, mouth breathing, sometimes nasal breathing? What are your thoughts? Because I know you first did the Wim Hof, and now so what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, so I think that there's a difference between a breath workout and day-to-day breathing. So, and I think for the day-to-day breathing, the breaths we take day in, day out, 24/7, every day, that is the most influential and important breath to work with. And for this, I'm a great promoter of gentle, slow, nose breathing, definitely in through the nose. The mouth, in a way, it's very precise for the out breath, yeah? Because if we vocalize, and vocalization, in a way, is one of the most sophisticated breath regulations that we have. Like, you know, we talk the rhythm, we pause, and all this, you know, we breathe in, we speak, and if we speak well and it flows, it's a very precise breath work, really. Like, yeah. So I always say, you know, in through the nose, like a silent it's a very precise way to slow down the breath. Yeah. More precise than we're able to do it through the nose. For the more intense breathing, I'm quite happy to breathe through the mouth, because I think we shouldn't force our breath through the nose. Yeah. So if I want to stimulate and I don't want to, if I force the breath through the nose, it actually congests the nose more and there's no benefit. So for the last round, if I want to stimulate and breathe intensely, why not through the mouth for 30, 40, 50 breaths?
Yeah.
But so I'm opened, but for always, I would say, adjust it to what you want to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And make it, you know, study it, learn it, pay attention to breathing, and learn to live with less oxygen, like, yeah, in daily life. Yeah.
Yeah.
And trying to tolerate more higher CO2 levels. And I struggle sometimes because I suffer with allergies. So at times it can be challenging, like in the middle of the summer, I feel straight away that my breathing quality declines, but I'm aware of it, like, you know, so I can compensate. And I know that it's affecting me because I measure it in a way. I feel it. And when the allergy season is over, it improves straight away because I have a lot of things in place to make it better again.
Yeah, I definitely also agree. I've been experimenting with nasal breathing as well as with mouth breathing. And depending on the context, depending on the audience, depending on the group, I might mix it up a lot of times. I might start with nasal breathing, gentle, relaxed, but then at a certain point do mouth breathing. And then towards the end, come back to relaxed state. But yeah, there's definitely something to say about mixing it up with mouth breathing, because it has a slightly different influence. It has a different effect when you take it in from the mouth. But not all day. Throughout the day, just nasal breathing. That's the safest. That's the best.
Yes.
It protects you as well. Does wonders for your body. I want to talk a bit about the cold, because the cold also forms a critical piece of your journey, as well as something that you like doing. What does the cold do for you particularly? Why do you keep going back to the cold?
For me, the cold is really a catalyst to connect me with a deep, deep stillness in myself. Yeah. And I love the moment. So in a way, the cold, you know, it's unpleasant and it's intense, and there's always a little hesitation. Should I really do this now? Like, yeah. And then the initial moment and this sort of harsh stimuli to the body. And then there's this transition phase of learning to deal with it, questioning, should I really stay in it or not?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's a moment, like, so there's this moment where I feel something just happened, yeah. And it's for me, it's I call it, it's an adaptive shift, like, you know, so it's a directive experience of this enormous power of our physiology to adapt, yeah. And for me, this is just this is Zen, that the moment of adaptation. I move into a space where I feel, well, now it's just me and the cold and the stillness and nature. And yeah, there's no question, should I be here or not? Like, I know that I'm in the best place. And I love it because I'm quite a cerebral guy. Like, you know, I on a good day, it really, I have a lot of potential to get things done and to figure things out, to think my way into the world in a way and work out things deeply. On a bad day, I can get stuck in over-analyzing, overthinking, over... And the cold definitely always interrupts that. And it's definitely about just now and the beauty of this moment, the beauty of nature, the pause, that space between one thought and the other, you know, and the opening to a deep appreciation of nature as well and our ability to be in it and be touched by it deeply. This is for me the gift I receive.
Yeah, I definitely feel the cold does something similar for me as well. It has a wonderful way of helping you change your state, but also calm the mind, because when you are in the cold, especially with very cold water, ice cold water, you have no option but to come back to the present moment. You can't think about the problems that you've been thinking about. You can't be anxious about something that might or might not happen tomorrow or the month after that. Mm-hmm. You're just thinking about the cold. And in that moment, you find yourself, like you pointed out, in a very contemplative, meditative moment where you feel connected yes. with everything around you and everyone around you, especially the person who might be sort of guiding you through the cold journey, right? Somebody who's right beside you. You feel that shared sense of connection for sure. My question to you is, what, you know, there are different ways in which you can experience the cold, right? Cold shower, cold plunge, jumping into the river, lake, ocean, maybe. What has been the most spectacular, beautiful cold immersion experience for you that you can still recall? You know, that day, that moment, that was the best. That was the most beautiful. Is there something that comes to your mind?
There's two scenarios come to mind. One is the river at the end of my land and a cold 0 degree crispy morning in the winter with a river temperature of 4 degrees. And I really, it felt like I saw the forest that I've been living around for the last 15 years for the first time.
With different eyes.
And I could really, with my eyes, with my senses, with my, just appreciate the nature of the, just everything made sense. Like, you know, the way the trees connected to the land and where I had the relationship under the ground and the body of nature, the river. And yeah, it's one of those moments that you never forget. It's like this, and it becomes the reference for what is possible as to our appreciation for, you know, our a state of consciousness, I suppose.
That's a great point. The cold definitely makes you realize that you're not at the center of the ecosystem, but you are one part of the ecosystem. And it helps you appreciate small things like nature or maybe the sunshine and water and where you are on the planet. As you shared that, it reminded me that it helps me come back to a place of humility and also appreciation of where I am.
Yeah, and I like what you said, this to change your state. Like, and I think this is adaptation, really. The nature of adaptation is really the ability to change our state. Yeah. And I think we are very human beings are very adaptable. And we've got an enormously adaptable physiology. Like, you know, we can eat almost all foods. You know, that's a huge spectrum of foods we can shift. We can endure all types of temperatures. We've inhabited all sorts of environments. So there's hardly any other animal on the planet that has such a powerful capacity to adapt and change the state of their physiology accordingly. And I think this is what we experience. And you mentioned when somebody guides you and the human connection. And I think that our social nature has a lot to do with this ability to adapt, because our nervous system is actually, we are able to fine regulate through our social interactions. So the ability to slow down our heart and to slow down our breath and to slow down our metabolism, we couldn't do if we didn't have this socially attuned nervous system. And we are the most sophisticated amongst all animals. So in a way, this is the power of humanity in a way. It's all those things come to the forefront, you know, this being in nature, sharing food, sharing difficulty also. And I love it. Like, you know, I love the moment when I guide people through ice baths. It's a very deep, I'm like a midwife sometimes.
Because you help people become reborn as well, right?
go into the water. Because it's a good midwife actually is able to be present and mirror and help mom to regulate and pace and adapt to the intensity of birth. And you know, I often see it's ice water experience is a little bit like this. It's much shorter, of course. but it has similar features, you know, very intense sensory experience. And how do we regulate in the midst of it all? And if we manage, there's a wealth of, oh, wow, I'm stronger, I'm more resilient for it. Yeah,
that's true. I still remember there was this one time in Vancouver where I live in. This was the month of January 2021. I'd gone to the beach of English Bay and I wanted to do a cold dip. So, you know, I take off my clothes and obviously everyone else is sort of clothed, right? So they're wondering what's wrong with me. Why am I going into the ocean? But there I am. And because they're wondering, like, is he all right? Why is he doing that? But I go into the water and like you pointed out, I see the most beautiful sunset because it's evening time. And I noticed that the sunlight is now, the sun is now sort of crimson, purpley, a little bit orange as well. And that light was reflecting on the water. And the water was not very choppy or wavy. It was like almost placid, but sort of moving as well. So it felt very hallucinatory. You know, like you don't know where the sun starts and where the water ends. You know, it's like everything was like this beautiful, wavy, purpley, crimsony, orange. And that for me was like a rapture moment where I stood just in awe of how beautiful you know, sun is and the universe is and our world is, which in a normal circumstance, like if I was just walking down the street or going to purchase groceries, maybe I would not notice it. But the cold made me freeze and behold what we already have, the beauty that we already have access to. So that for me was a beautiful experience.
I totally get that. That really resonates with my experience as well. And yeah, I think it's really a gift to be able to step out of our default mode. You know, there's this sort of the default mode network in the brain that, you know, the self-talk, the all the narrative that we continuously recite. And I think any tool, and I've always approached meditation through a physical activity, So I've never been a great sort of, let's sit down and meditate guy. So I've always approached it through music, through martial art, dancing. I love dancing tango as well. So it's and all those things, the moments of a special moment of appreciation of something deep like comes, and a stillness and a knowing and a connection. And yeah, it's, I think we need to, this is the pauses that we need to actually realize what is out there, like, you know, to really, really connect with, and what is in there, of course, as well, like, you know, and that's why I love to share it, like, you know, for those moments to be able to communicate, guys, there's something really precious. All we need to do is pause and open our senses to the world, and whatever way you can do it, do it. You know, it's,
yeah.
And my way is more through, you know, breath work, cold water, dancing, music, and other people may be more connected to sort of a more still meditation. Whatever it is, I think it's we need it. You know, the world needs it, and the more the better.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Now, as we come towards the end of our episode, I usually ask this question to all my guests about, especially ones that are into breath work and into inquiring as to the true nature of reality, right? What do you feel is the true nature of reality? What is your understanding of consciousness? Do you think that we're living an illusion, like some people say? Do you think that we are, this is like a projection of sorts, a hologram? What is your thoughts of what have you found so far as to the true nature of reality?
Wow. Yes. So I'm an opened, again, I've got a very opened, inquisitive curiosity about it. Like, yeah, I'm generally, I've realized I've got a materialistic routing. I like science. I trust the process of research and finding out more. But I also have a wealth of experience, and in a way, there are all those experiences that they're just as valuable as anything else. And I from my sense of it, really, the world appears in our consciousness. And who knows what's outside of it, yeah? But for sure, our brain creates the reality that we experience, yeah? And, you know, some people say, well, does it actually recreate the reality that is out there? Or does it just create it full stop? And who knows what is out there? I'm curious in a way, and it seems more to be that it creates more than it recreates. So
right.
That's my latest understanding. And yeah, it's I think there's a lot to be until we really understand the nature of consciousness through science. You know, it's very difficult. Science clearly has, you know, if it can't answer it precisely, who knows? You know, like it's going to be interesting to find out more. But from my personal experience, I think for our life as we live it, intuition, a sense of what to do, a sense of connection and a sense of meaning and purpose, and it's much more important than objective reality. Like, yeah. So for me, for my actions, for my relational, you know, this is all really, the most important thing is my intuition, my inner guidance, my sense of things. Yeah. Now that's not objectively, that is not as important in a way. Like, so that's why we need science, because, you know, we need to have an overarching way to explore and find out. But for my personal life, as I act it out from moment to moment, you know, I think it's not, the question is not what should one do, but what should I do, really? Like, yeah. And that question, I don't think science can answer that question. Like, you know, and so in a way that it's a holistic phenomena. And as far as I'm concerned, I trust my intuitions. I fully trust that it will lead me, not somebody else, but me through the world in a meaningful way. Like, yeah. So, but then to find out more and to find out the mechanisms behind breathwork and consciousness, you know, my intuitions may be completely wrong. And I think that's why we need science. And yeah, I trust that. So I'm in that sense, I just have a very open, curious curiosity about what will emerge. Like, and I'm quite attuned to different sort of research projects, and I listen to podcasts who explore the mind-body connection, and I'm.
So, really quickly, yeah. These days there's a lot of research in line with what you're sharing right now, where people, especially scientists, neuroscientists, people studying human consciousness and the true nature of reality. So, people are experimenting and trying out plant medicine, breath work, and all these different practices that sort of help you change your state. And they've come across and noted that they had an experience which seemed more real than the normal mundane reality. Have you had an experience like that? Is there something that, you know, you would like to share?
Absolutely. Like, yeah. I often think the normal day-to-day reality is the least convincing for its realness as those experiences go. I would be much more subscribed to think I'm closer to reality, the true nature of reality, when I'm in an altered state and not when I'm doing my shopping lists and my whatever planning and projects I'm engaged with. I'm absolutely, I think it's just, you know, it's a sort of a functional interface that we sort of become enslaved in as well, to a degree. through society, through our upbringing, through our patterning.
And is there a sensory experience that you would like to share? Is there something that comes to mind at all?
I suppose an experience I had on a psychedelic substance when I was messing around with all sorts of drugs. I was smoking.
Yeah.
I think I ended up smoking 15 joints a day. It was a dark phase of my late teenage years. And I got some synthetic DMT. Okay. And I was in the nature, probably the most, my most beloved nature in at home in Austria. Yeah. Close is this particular creek, a valley that I go to, where there's a strong sense of belonging in me. Like if somebody asked me, where are you from? I wouldn't think of the hospital in Villach where I was born, yeah. but I would think of this mountain valley that I go to, and it just, I know it with all a lot of important people, my dad, my uncle, people that helped me grow up in a way. And yeah, so I went in there and I took this, and I was elevated to a level of experience that I just never even, I couldn't even imagine anything like it. And it wasn't intensely psychedelically stimulating, but there was, it's almost like the fabric of the universe on revealing itself. And the immediate sense was everything is connected, yeah, through immediacy. Like not, it wasn't like, but there was connection is the nature of reality in a way, like, connection in all dimensions of space. And it was there. And I remember playing this. I was there with a friend, and he was an instrument builder and had this tom piano. It was a kalimba, little musical instrument. And I could experience the sound as a frequency of connection, which went, it was inherent in the universe, like that I was in, like, yeah. And I was, it was such a profound experience. And also one really important thing, there was an abundance of physical ability. Like, you know, we climbed cliffs, we ran up. It was almost like an altered state of ability to do whatever we needed to do, wanted to do. I want to run up this mountain, and we did it. And then now I want to go down again, and we did it. And if I went there tomorrow, like, you know, you look up, it's like, oh my God, that's a big one now. And you'd be sweating. But this really connected me. You know, I knew at the time I had to search this state without substance. This was not, it was not like, I knew no other, taking it again wouldn't be the solution. It wasn't in the substance, it was in the nature, in the biology, in my possibility. And that's what started. I haven't smoked a single joint after that. And I've only recently started to explore some plant medicine again. And I've actually come to the conclusion that all the work that I did in the in-between, at the time, this state felt like it was a million miles away from my normal state, yeah. And coming back to it now after a life of all sorts of experiences, I've come to realize this is a state, it's just around the corner.
Yeah. You're so close to it.
It's very close, and it's not so far away, and there's actually a lot of connection to, you know, there's a lot to be exported from those experiences into life. Like, it's not just one experience. There's something to be met and reflected that stays much closer than at the time. I felt it was just this enormous gift because it was so far. It's still, I mean, I'm not making it small by any means, but it's much closer because of all the other work that I have done. And it doesn't feel like this massive, it's just as around the corner as a pause and a reflective moment or a beautiful breath practice, a beautiful moment in with music and shared music. So it's more like this, I see it, something that I think for me, I've come to the conclusion, I like to explore this every now and then, not regularly, but intermittently, to just help, help to open a window that is pretty, yeah, or just clear it a little bit more, or do something to it.
Yeah, I think plant medicine definitely has a place in at least helping us see the landscape. And then you can come back and then use breath work and other tools to then spend more time in that landscape, because now you know where
exactly
to go in those areas. But yeah, I think there's definitely a very powerful place. I remember there was one time where I was sitting in ceremony, having magical mushrooms, not reishi mushrooms. But this was a very profound experience that I had, where I saw geometric patterns of all shapes and sizes in front of my eyes, yellow, blue, and a little bit green. So it was constantly making these beautiful kaleidoscope-esque geometric patterns. And it felt like that pattern was actually communicating with me. It was showing me how beautiful this universe really is. It's showing me what is out there, or maybe what is in there. And that was not just me watching it. It was very, very interactive. And then at one point, something really weird happened that in retrospect is a lesson for me. But then in my bag, I had my phone. And my phone had my morning alarm on it. So at 4:30 in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning, it rang, and I felt as if the whole universe was shattering with that sound, and I didn't know where the sound is coming from, who's playing this music, where am I stuck in. And somehow, some way, I just took out my phone and I switched it off. It was earth shattering. It felt like the whole universe was a big bang, you know, like with that sound. That was an incredible experience. And I appreciate you for sharing your experience and your journey, because I feel that the more that we share, the more vulnerable we are with our own journeys, the more encouragement and safety and security and support that other people who are having these experiences, which the normal world would consider eccentric and strange and weird. But I think it's time for all of us, like you pointed out, to come together and share what our personal journeys are, for the benefit of the collective. And for that, I really appreciate you, Yosef. What lies ahead for you in 2022, and how can people learn more about you?
Wow. So yeah, no, I'm on Instagram, on Facebook. I always promote the activities through those platforms. And yeah, I've got a pretty busy year. I'm teaching a lot of cranial courses, and I'll be doing more workshops in more Wim Hof workshops. I was hoping to do the level 2 training with Wim, but I'm actually teaching a seminar in exactly that time frame. So But that's on the cards because that's something I want to do as well. Lever 2 does the expeditions and nature explorations with groups. So that's my own personal... I know it will happen. It's just
did
a matter of finding
did
the...
They teach you how to take groups through expeditions?
Yes, yes. You go over... It's a three-day... It builds... You have to do... You have to lead a certain amount of workshops and get some good feedbacks. And then you do a three-day where you do the mountain experience in Poland. And they help you to shape it so it's safe. And yeah, it's just all the important elements when you bring people into cold nature that you need to pay attention to. So that's my next... And lots of music. We've formed a cello ensemble, 5 cellists. So that's exciting. So there'll be a lot of music playing. And the rest is often guided by the nature, like, you know, the bees. At the moment, they need to be prepared for the winter. And then in spring, they need to be prepared for the summer. And then... The garden needs to be, so it's, I love this, like, because in a way, a lot of what I do follows the natural cycle. And then the rest is more, building on my, you know, sharing what I do with people. And that's the year ahead, really.
Amazing. Wonderful. So what is your Instagram handle? How can people sort of connect with you?
It's Josilein Steiner, Josilein Steiner.
Okay. We'll add that in the show notes for sure.
Right, thank you.
Drive. If you like this episode, if you love this episode, then don't just press stop. Make sure you take a few minutes to write us an iTunes rating and review or hit follow. Tell your friends about it because, listen, we need to grow and we need your help. Okay. I'm speaking to you directly, the person listening to this episode right now. We need you to take some action. Write us a review. Tell somebody about our podcast, or maybe join us on our next breathwork journey where you can connect with me on Zoom, no matter where in the world you are. Come to my7chakras.com/drop-in. My7chakras.com/drop-in. Use promo code HEAL2022. If this is your first time, you get it for free. HEAL2022. If you're on Instagram, then take a screenshot of this episode and then tag me on Instagram so that I can share your story. My handle is @my7chakras. That's @my7chakras. So, Yosef, thank you for coming on our show, talking to us about all things like martial arts and music and consciousness and breath work and core. We went all over the place, but at the same time, everything that we spoke had a particular theme, which then connected it back together. Like you pointed out, everything is connected. I appreciate your time, and I hope you have a nice day ahead.
Thank you very much, Aditya. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to My 7 Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my, SEVEN, chakras.com.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Vim, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.